Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support. Welcome everyone to another wonderful episode, another special episode of Brainstorm Brewery. It's one of those, I think so. I've been drinking too much because I got my drinking buddy here. We got Kevy Metal from Heavy Meta. Me and Jason just got done on his cast, so now he's going to join us on this cast.
We're like tying it together. Like one cast ends and another one begins.
That's synergy. Right there.
That's right.
Chain casting. That's how some people smoke.
It's called West Coast time. We're able to do that shit.
That's right.
So we're going to jump into this, you know, Brainstorm Brewery. We're going to talk about the finance. You guys want to say hi? We got Corbin and Ryan in the background.
I'm Corbin. Hello.
Yeah, we didn't get invited.
Hey, so how about...
this is our first cast.
This is the first cast for Ryan and I. But for those few people out there who are listening to this, who may not, are listening to the other half of this chain podcast, Kevin, do you want to introduce yourself and just kind of let people know where they can find you?
I'm Kevy Metal. and I am the co-host of Heavy Meta, on manadeprived.com. I am the loud, obnoxious drunk that a lot of you love to hate, and Jason Alt just loves to love.
Yeah, you should have seen it. Jason got berated. Like, it's, if you guys think Jason talks a lot on this cast, he doesn't talk a lot on that cast.
Yeah, actually, the times Jason's been on there, like, he's done a lot of talking, but, like, tonight he just seemed upset. I did a lot of picking on Jason, but that's what I do.
I really wasn't paying attention.
I love this guy.
And then, like,
what I think it was is he was playing Dota like Jay Boosh because he wants to be like Jay Boosh.
You found the secret.
No.
Now Jason really hates you.
This guy. And then I pushed my way into his podcast so that he could berate me for a while.
Jason, you turned your back on League of Legends and played Dota. What is wrong with you?
Well, he wanted to be like Jay.
Yeah.
So what we were doing on Heavy Meta, though, is we had the playmat. If you guys created your playmat and submitted the playmat for the Crack and Rum Heavy Meta Brainstorm Brewery playmat, we came up with the winners. You could check out Heavy Meta for the winners and the contest, and there's prizes and everything. So
that was awesome.
Yeah, you'll see it. You'll find it out. It'll be in the show notes. Awesome playmats. Thank you, everyone that submitted a playmat. You're going to be able to get your chance to buy them. They'll be on Ink playmats. The three winners will be around for the entire time. You can buy those, and all the other contestants should be able to buy those within the store. So if you want to get one of those playmats, Crack and Run, Brainstorm Brewery, Heavy Meta playmat, go check it out.
Absolutely. Huge shootout. Shout out to Ink Playmats because they actually kind of threw down. They decided to put everything together on like a gallery for everybody that entered. So for the first 2 weeks, you can just get any one of them. And then after that, you will get the three winners on our, like, the Heavy Meta gallery. So thank you.
Awesome.
Ink Playmats.
So now we're going to jump into some, finance 101. Start it off like we do every cast. To get you guys going. So this time we're going to talk about sealed product, all the various sealed product, what to do with it. Who wants to tackle this first?
Okay, I'll get us started here, I guess. So the idea behind sealed product is basically, you know, like the old stereotype with action figures. You know, they're worth more if you don't open them. So, you know, the reason it's kind of like a finance topic is because a lot of people in the past, we'll pick up sealed product and you just kind of hold it over time. For instance, you know, something like from the vault, if you can get them at MSRP, when they come out, and then hold them for a few years, a lot of times they go up, you know, from the Vault Dragons is very expensive now. So, you know, this question comes up when some new product comes out, like a new From the Vaults or Modern Masters or Conspiracy. People want to know, you know, hey, what do I do with the sealed product? Is it going to be worth my time and my money to just hold on to it? So, I mean, where do you guys stand, you know, just in the theory, the practice behind it in general?
I mean, usually what I tell people is sealed product is something that, I don't know, it's almost your kind of, your kind of finance person where it's something you're going to hold on to for quite a while. You're rarely going to be able to turn it over for quick profit. There are exceptions like Modern Masters, stuff like that. And speaking of Modern Masters, I really think the place to get into sealed product is with these specialty sets, things like the Commander decks. I don't necessarily know that I agree anymore with buying, you know, a box of each set and sitting on it. I think it's fine, but I think you're going to do a lot better if you're willing to just wait around that one or two times a year and stock up and spend whatever you want to on that, because the gains on it are a lot quicker because it's a specialty set and they're not reprinting a lot of those cards with at least with those set symbols and those kinds of things, or alternate art or whatever it may be. Those tend to be more expensive down the road, even as the singles themselves. So obviously the sealed product is going to be more expensive as well. Modern Masters is a perfect example that you can't get a box anymore under $400 from what I understand. But, I mean, and that's only a year old.
Yeah, I like sealed product, quite a bit for the long term. You do have to know what to go in on. Like you said, sometimes boxes work out, you know, like, some people, I know Sigmund, from Quiet Speculation, definitely went pretty deep into Innistrad boxes and didn't love how that worked out for him. So, you know, I like getting into the specialty products as well, and I have no problem. I have a closet full of sealed product that I'll just sit in there and let appreciate. But I think the most important thing to consider when it comes to these things is the opportunity cost. And what opportunity cost basically means is every dollar you have tied up in a box of Modern Masters is a dollar you can't spend on some other, you know, short-term speculation. So while it's great to get a box of Modern Masters and keep it in your closet, for, you know, 2 or 3 years and then sell it, if in the meantime you could have used that money to, you know, buy some other card that was going to go up in price or bought cards for your deck or just simply played tournaments, well then, you know, that's the opportunity cost, because you do pay a price for having that sitting in your closet. So I think it's just kind of a balance. You have to, you know, be willing to set aside the money for those long-term gains, if that's what you're going to commit to.
And so what's the value of having a sealed box versus having 36 packs in a box that happen to be cracked? Like, why is that so less valuable, and things that people should be wary about when buying loose packs?
I think the main reason for that is, especially with the really old sets, you can actually see through some of the boosters. In addition to that, there is something called poking the pack, which you can take a pin and poke at the top of the pack at a certain point and be able to look inside some of them. And there's different ways to do it with different packs. But really, you just don't know if they've been tampered with. Anytime right. You can buy something with the factory sealing on it, you're just better off.
Yeah, I mean, pack box mapping is a thing.
Mapping is way more prevalent than poking. Like, no one's poking packs at
I mean, I guess what most packs that I end up buying anymore that are loose packs are usually older, and that's something you have to worry about a lot more with that than, you know, box mapping.
Right. Yeah. I mean, with a lot of the, you know, the last 5 years or maybe a little farther back, I don't know, but box mapping is a thing. And what that means is, the print run on cards is never truly random. The distribution isn't. So with enough sample cases, you can actually determine, well, if I open this pack in this box and it's this card, and then this pack is this card, you will be able to know what another pack in that box is. So what unscrupulous people do is they open up the box, they map it out, they pull the expensive packs out, and then they put the ones with bulk rares back in. So then if they sell you a box with 36 packs in it and they're all bulk rare packs, well, you just got screwed on paying a bunch for it. So that's why having that seal on it is so important.
Plus, I have bought resealed packs on eBay. It was a box of, like, 8th edition, and it was super cheap, and we just wanted it to draft with. And, you know, the glue seemed really weird. And it turns out what they'd done is just resealed the packs and sold them for cheap. So we got to draft. eBay refunded our money. The guy got his account shut down. It was a very good day for us, but it could have been bad if eBay hadn't been on our side. So, like, the factory seal, the shrink wrap that has the Wizards logo on it, that's what you want to look for.
So just one more point, on sealed product is that you have to be aware if you do want to get into it, that it's kind of difficult to move. You know, cause if you buy a box of Innistrad for $100 when it comes out and then a year later it goes up or 2 years, you know, whatever, just use an example, it goes to say 250. So then you have a box that, oh, you see, oh, it's worth 250. Well, the market for a sealed box of Innistrad is much, much smaller than the market for singles. So, you know, if you go to a dealer, they're not going to give you anywhere near that. You're going to get half of that, and then your investment looks really bad. You know, if you go on eBay and some of these other places where you kind of have to get rid of them, then you're also losing fees and stuff there. So I think in the long term, you have to be aware that it's going to be harder to move these boxes than it seems at first.
All right. There you go. Finance 101, another one in the can. So let's get to what everyone wants to talk about, these M15 spoilers. We just got a new juicy one right now. We got Avacyn, the Guardian Angel.
Oh, I haven't seen this. Uh-oh.
Yeah, so this is a two colorless and white for a legendary angel. 5/4 flying vigilance. You pay one and a white and you prevent all damage that would be dealt to another target creature this turn by sources the color of your choice. And then 5/2 and white, prevent all damage that be dealt to target player by this turn by sources of the color of your choice.
So what I find immediately interesting about this card is that this set in particular is already saying, hey, you know how you had those plane specific cards with plane specific names that could never be reprinted? Well, we have Avacyn.
Right.
You know, it's not a reprint in this case. But it does kind of throw that theory on its head.
That is true.
It does seem like they're kind of digging back into like everything, like not exploring new design space, like the, you know, with the like the souls. They're like, here, there's a whole cycle of past sets, and here's, you know, Avacyn, and you know, there's the reprints that are always going to happen in the M sets, but like, yeah, with Avacyn there too, like, you know, not part of like the souls cycle or anything like that. Picking a specific character. Have it, you know, and for instance, having a Johnny with the whole Elspeth cloak on his art, and like they seem like they're just kind of reaching back.
Yeah, I like how they're doing that. It's like Nessia.
Nissa.
I keep saying
you're
that
gonna,
wrong.
Before we go any farther, you're gonna have to explain that one to me.
The Nissa.
What does it mean? What does it mean that a Johnny has Elspeth's cloak?
So the artwork, it's been kind of blasted across Twitter, but, the artwork for the Ajani, from this set is like Ajani's wearing Elspeth's cloak, like from her artwork.
Dead Elspeth.
Or so dead Elspeth. Like, yeah, dead Elspeth.
Did they do a dance and merge or what?
No, he basically just like, you know, as far as the story goes,
Elspeth didn't need the cloak anymore.
Yeah, Elspeth didn't need the cloak anymore because
she wasn't going to wear it.
Elspeth died. So, spoilers.
Johnny decided to get all dashboard confessional and put her fucking cloak on and go fucking, instead of like, you'd think that would be a Johnny Vengeant. But no, it's like a Johnny the Steadfast. He's just like,
oh,
all,
spoilers,
you know what?
Man. I didn't know Elspeth died.
Oh man, what? How would you not know that? It was in the book.
About that on this cast,
oh, it was in the book. Okay, when you go into MDG Ryan mode, I blank out.
All right,
no, I didn't read the book.
I can spoil something.
I think last week we talked about this. Do you just not listen while we talk on the cast?
When you go MDG Ryan, I do not listen.
It wouldn't even just be. I don't even think I brought it up.
I don't think we talked about this last week. I'm going to go on record
Corbin,
saying that.
Corbin, if I can be the one to spoil something for you, that means you're behind the times.
Well, that is true.
yeah, Elspeth is dead. I'm sorry.
Next, you're going to tell me that the Phyrexians won.
Oh, yeah. Koth is dead, too, by the way.
What about Tybalt? Did he die? Please say he died.
Hey, they didn't kill off Tybalt for some fucking reason.
Hey, he's going to come back and be OP.
Oh, yeah.
He might be. So, hey, Nissa came back and was doing some shit. But yeah, so Ajani is wearing Dead Elspeth's, like, cloak in the artwork because, you know, Elspeth got killed and Ajani was trying to get at it. And here we are now. He's like, you know what? Fine. She's dead. I'm going to wear her cloak. And instead of being vengeant, I'm going to be steadfast.
And he, and then, like, looking for her murderer, he ran into Avacyn.
Yeah. And they're both white creatures, and she's like, hey, check this out. I am going to help you find her murderer. Although we all know who it was.
I really don't. I truly do not.
Heliod killed her.
Oh, what an asshole.
So, like, there's this whole crazy inner turmoil going on. Like, there's, like, some of the Young and the Restless shit going on in the white part of the color pie.
Okay, the real point, I follow along with the story a little bit. It is, however, sometimes very difficult to find stuff out like, hey, Elspeth died just from the set, which is, they want you to be able to follow the story just from the cards, and that just clearly didn't happen.
I mean, but even now that you know, do you even care?
Right. I know that there's not going to be an Elspeth print.
Well, I do. I feel like this, though. Like, the fact that they do want you, you know, like Corbin said, they do want you to be able to kind of follow the story from the cards, but they leave so much out. Like, you know, basically, like, going through the artwork in the cards and the flavor text in the cards, there's not much that can be told in that story. And
there's no picture with the dead elves.
They told the entire, in the Tempest block.
Oh my god.
That's all.
We're not talking about the fucking Tempest block, Jason.
You're saying they can't tell the fucking story in the flavor text and the cards, and it's retarded.
Well, let's look at Deicide. Deicide, though. But, like, Deicide looked like the pinnacle of the entire story. Like, that was it.
Yeah, because they killed a god, right?
And then all of a sudden, oh, wait, it turns out, no, she died. Like, that's just bad flavor.
From what I got, and I'm not a big flavor follower, but from what I got, like, through the whole fucking story, through Twitter and the internet, it was like, basically, Heliod wasn't happy with Elspeth, and he's just like, well, I'm a god, and fucking killed her. That's it. And he's just like,
Heliod just doesn't like planeswalkers in general, so, like, the gods were hunting the planeswalkers, right?
So wait, did any of the gods die?
Xenagos,
yeah.
Xenagos died.
Is that what the Deicide card is?
Exactly.
Like,
yeah. That's probably... Okay.
See, I get that. Why didn't they print a card with a dead Elspeth on it? That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Oh, anyways. That might still be spoiled.
Why don't we spend five minutes on this? Like, we were talking about Avacyn, and I wanted to talk about that whole cycle.
See?
Avacyn, Jaleera, Obnixilis, Yesin, and whatever the red one's gonna be. Why are they not mythic?
Obnixilis, that card.
Why are they rare? Why are those shitty souls at Mythic, and those are rare?
Because they're learning. They're learning. You don't need to make all the good cards at Mythic, because, you know what? Half of today's cards are rare. There's nothing wrong with that.
These are named characters. Named characters who are as big of a deal as to have an entire set named after them should be Mythic.
Oh my god.
Random card that is just a soul.
But, like.
Player planes named after them, to be fair.
But Perilous Vault sitting right next to her doesn't have a set named after her.
They're named after planes. They don't have planes named after them. Right? That is a soul from Theros.
They are
right?
a soul of that plane. That seems a little more relevant than one character. Are they like one, when you really think about it, like, that, I don't know, that feels more legendary to me than some random legend walking around.
What? So something feels more legendary to you.
I mean, we call them
legends,
but it's just still a random.
They're not even legendary. They're just avatars.
Souls? No. Avacyn's legendary. Should definitely be mythic. The souls should be rare.
Wait, a polymorphous is not a mythic card. I'm sorry. Avacyn, as is not mythic. You were talking about
how it wouldn't be good in a deck as a 4-of, so that shows how divorced you are from EDH.
It's
EDH
named,
being the players who want legendary creatures.
That was my fault. As far as an ability, like an actual ability and being complex, that's a rare ability. That's not a mythic.
We named an entire set. The entire set story of a set was based around this character. And you're going to tell me that's not mythic?
Nope.
But hey, Corbin, we're both off the whole fucking story side of things. So
yeah, you're right, man. I try to have an opinion about what should be mythic and what should be rare. And Marcel says I'm dumb. I believe him.
Oh, yes. Write this down. Hold up. Wait, this is going for episode 200 right now. Time stamp.
All right, so let's talk about the souls. I imagine people have some feelings on them.
I like them, personally. It's weird that Jason doesn't like them being the EDH player.
They're not good in EDH. Have you read them?
I think some of them are.
I don't like Jason. He's an EDH player.
Oh, uh-oh. I play EDH, too.
Oh, but I like you, Corbin. So that.
Oh, all right.
Why do you like Corbin? Nobody else
We're
does.
Good.
That's why he likes him.
Are you guys gonna be really upset if like you guys do the shut up Corbin thing if we just like fuck yourself, Jason, like as a heavy meta shirt?
Wow. That is crazy.
All right, let's actually say just a little on track and talk about the souls. I'll be the boring one to bring us back so that people don't just rage quit our cast because we're yelling at each other. No, okay, so they all have they're mythics, they're 6/6s, they're like the second incarnation of Titans. They come down with keywords that are rather like meaningless considering how big they are, like Death Touch on the black one. They have an ability, and then the same ability if you exile, you know, the soul from your graveyard. So, I mean, I think they're definitely powerful, especially the graveyard clause. I mean, paying 6 mana for a 6/6 that dies to everything and you have to untap with to do anything is probably okay, but not, you know, not as powerful as Titans were. But the exile from the graveyard clause to get an effect seems extremely powerful.
Yeah, what do you guys think? You're getting more out of it, definitely. I think that's undervalued. A lot of people that are probably new players aren't going to see that and see how powerful it is. So it's actually kind of interesting that they are putting that on the mythics, because I think it is, someone that's more advanced is going to be able to recognize the power of that. But I think it's cool. I'm a personal fan of the soul of New Phyrexia. Like that one to me, I think.
Yeah, that one seems very powerful.
I love the New Phyrexia one.
So the soul of New Phyrexia, guys, it's the colorless one, 6 mana, 6/6, trample, 5 mana permanent you control gain indestructible, 5 mana exile it from your graveyard permanent you control gain indestructible. This feels very powerful to me. Let's look a little bit into the future here. One of the decks in block that was good, you know, not metagame defining or anything at the Pro Tour, but good, was the Reanimator archetype. These would kind of mill yourself and you'd hit, with your Whip of Erebos, you'd bring back some of these big things along with Rescue from the Underworld. And now you have a cycle of cards that seems to fit into that perfectly. So I think there's definitely some potential for that deck to improve quite a bit from this cycle.
That's a good point. Like, I honestly never looked at that cycle. Like, I kind of wrote that cycle off and I looked at them individually as cards that, you know, could be good in this situation, might not be very good in, you know, in limited or even in constructed. But like, I don't know, looking at it from that point of view, it kind of changes. Like, you know, I guess the Reanimator strategy I just didn't pay attention to before, and it brings another side to it.
Yeah, I was hoping for a more self-mill. Like, there's a lot of abilities to set it up. Like, you got the new spider that self-mills. There's right. A lot of other things going on. The Necromancer Assistant in the set. Like, it looks like they're trying to set up a self-mill, especially with these. But, like, as we're getting more and more of the set revealed, it doesn't look like that's actually going to be the case unless next block is actually going to support
that. I mean, I don't know. Right. I think that matters for limited. And Theros block had a lot of self-mill. There's the Satyr that does it. There's Insight of Krufix, or Krufix's Insight, or whatever it is that does it. There's definitely some support for it already. But yeah, I mean, so that's that. That's the cycle. Is there any one in particular that you guys want to talk about besides Inphyrexia?
I like the Theros one, honestly. I think that one might have a reasonable chance of seeing some play.
So the soul. Yeah, the Soul of Theros, it's same thing, 6 mana, 6/6, Vigilance. Creatures you control get +2/+2 and gain first strike and lifelink, and it's for 6 mana to activate that. I agree, that's really powerful. First strike, lifelink, it's very, very, very relevant.
I mean, also the black one, like if you can really
chain
that into a grindy deck and just like value creatures, kill them off or sacrifice and just fill your hand back up with them, it just seems like you could recur a lot going on with that. And I think undervalued, the Soul of Zendikar, the green one where you can make a beast token. Like, there's a lot of opportunities for getting mana. So I don't know if that green may be something they could do and this will be a player in that. Being able to pop it off twice in a turn, I think can just completely turn over a game. But I'll see.
Speaking of mana and green mana, Nissa. What do you guys think of Nissa?
I like Nissa. I like Nissa better than Ajani.
Yeah.
I like Nissa, and I think that card is insane. I mean, I don't mind a Johnny either, just because that ultimate is real and you can get there pretty quick. But, yeah, that Nissa is sweet.
But Nissa's not wearing a scarf.
not wearing a cloak.
So but what is Nissa?
I'm gonna keep my mouth shut, Marcel.
Nissa World Waker. 5 mana, 2 green, 3 colorless, starts at 3 loyalty. Target land you control becomes a 4/4 elemental creature with trample, still a land. +1, untap up to 4 target forests. -7, search your deck for any number of basic land cards, put them on the battlefield, they become 4/4 elementals with trample and they're still lands. So, there's like 2 ways to look at this. The first is that at some point you don't want to turn your, you don't always want to turn your lands into creatures because it opens them up to removal, which is something that Koth did not do because they were only tuned up turn. On the other hand, you can play this on turn 5, untap 4 lands, play something else, to protect her, and then the ultimate is extremely scary. So, yeah, I mean, do you guys think she's going to make an impact in Standard?
I hope so. I really want to play this card.
I think she really does. I think that, like, I don't know, Maddie brought up on the cast earlier, but, like, and I hadn't thought about this before until, like, reading it again, and I think that, like, a Bant Walker's list, like, this fits there. It needs time, I feel. Like, I'm not a big green player, but, like, it needs a couple turns to be able to turn on, but, like, of course, if you're in that deck anyway, you've already got that mapped out, and, like, this could really end games real fast.
Yeah, you could shoot up. You could go from, what, 5 to 10 the next turn?
Yeah.
So what do you guys think about this, Liliana the Vest and Chandra the Pyromancer coming back?
Chandra was a given based on the fact that, Chandra last year was the first one to have any success since, the original printing was a one of in Standard, back when that happened. So that was a given. Liliana Vest, I think anyone who said that Liliana the Veil was coming back was just crazy.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah,
I mean, why? If Thoughtseize is already oppressive, it would be really good. Hey, let's give them Liliana. So you can just go Thoughtseize pack right Liliana and pretend that you're playing a fair game, yeah?
Yeah, play Modern and Standard.
That was just never going to happen. So anyone who thought that was just, I guess, wishful thinking. Same people who said they're going to have fetch lands in the set.
Or Eldrazi.
Yeah,
I honestly thought like Garrick would be the black planeswalker of this set before.
I did think that too. I thought that was a possibility.
He's the horde lord. He can't be the planeswalker.
But we get a new Jace. Is what the deal going to be?
About that. Yeah.
Do we know that we're getting a new Jace?
Planeswalker?
Well, it's new art, so I would think they would do a new Jace, and they had the same one. Years.
Has anybody looked or like thought about that at all yet?
The what?
We're getting 6 planeswalkers in this set, right?
No, we're not. The Garruk is going to be like a side theme.
We were getting 6 planeswalkers in the set.
Who said that?
I read that somewhere. If that's true, like, Jace could be, because I mean, he's the living guild pact, right? Isn't the guild pact all 5 colors? Could we be getting like a 5 color, just ridiculous Jace?
That has been I doubt that's going to happen, but
yeah, I'll buy it.
The art for the Jace has something to do with the guild pack, so it's something Jace is involved in that.
It I could think be everybody flavored assumed
that
we way,
but I don't think it'll be 5 color.
Our Vorthos, resident Vorthos guy, man, you should be.
I mean,
on this
MTG Ryan, I don't know where you're at, man. Google comes up with nothing.
Isn't guild pack like all 5 colors? It makes sense. I thought I had heard somebody say that we were getting, I thought I had read somewhere that we were getting. 6 planeswalkers.
I think it was because we had fucking Nissa, like with the toys and shit like that. We had like Nissa spoiled, we had Liliana spoiled, and then we also had Garrick. So everybody assumed we were getting like an extra planeswalker,
right?
And that's not the case. Like we're getting Garrick as a fucking.
Yeah, I think that's
we're getting Garrick as a fucking side deck Hydra, and who's the face of the set? And then we're getting like it's nice that we're getting new planeswalkers instead of like Nissa Ravain, cause for fuck's sake. But, we've got a new Nissa, we've got a new Ajani, and then we've got the other, I'm assuming they're probably going with Jace Bellerin for this one.
I wouldn't be surprised.
That would be nice.
There's already two new planeswalkers.
I thought they announced the name of it.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, like, I'm pretty sure it's Jace, like, living, it's, like, living
Some asshole package. Just put that on Facebook. That hasn't been substantiated anywhere.
Jace, comma, Chromanticore.
Yeah, like, if I Photoshop Jace the Chromanticore Seeker, like, and put it on Facebook, is that, can you say I read it somewhere? Like, none of the sites whose opinion I actually respect have substantiated that, so I'm not going to report that on my podcast.
Oh, man, damn. You guys are way more professional about your podcast than we are, because, like, Maddie and I just be like, oh, I'm pretty sure I saw that somewhere on Twitter, and then it just becomes fact, as far as we're concerned.
Okay.
Oh, okay, they just revealed the name Jace. Okay, never mind. So he is just definitely blue then because of the border. They've already revealed the border and everything.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I hadn't actually seen it yet.
Yeah, we've got the art. It's Jace standing in front of the guild pack thing or whatever, which is, I think, less a collection of 5 colors and more a collection of 10 guilds. So, anyways, so he's a 10-colored
Jace.
I'm pretty sure it's just going to be a new Jace.
Yeah, I think you are absolutely correct. It's definitely not Valorant, though.
I don't see them giving us 3 new Planeswalkers in this set.
It could be Valorant. It could be Valorant with new art.
It could be. But I mean, why would they bring back?
I would see Beleriand with new art more than I would see them giving us a third new Planeswalker.
Yeah, people like Beleriand. Like, that card is good.
It is, especially now.
It's going to be really good with Thoughtseize.
Oh, man. Stop that. Stop that.
Hey, so man, if you want to.
We also can't doubt what can happen. Like, you know, they might, like, you know, they gave us these cards with, you know, all these, like, the flavor text is now the card designer's name. They might just decide to say, you know what, screw it. Let's give us 3 new Planeswalkers in this set. So we don't know.
We don't know. But have you guys seen the packaging for this? It's probably hands down some of the best shit I've seen in a long while. Well, I guess you guys haven't either, though.
I have. The only thing that I can hope is it's that, like, you know what, like, a lot of packaging, I know this sounds kind of off topic, but I'll bring this back. Like, beef jerky, for instance. Like, I go in and I fucking buy my beef jerky, and, like, it's got the same package, different logo on it. But there's a couple companies now that have started to use, like, the matte packaging, like, almost like your matte sleeves. And from the artwork with, like, the bright white artwork, or the bright white background on the packaging, it almost seems like that's kind of the direction they're going. It's like that newer,
modernist.
Let's give it that modern touch to it.
It's like the iOS 7.
Yeah, exactly. I can see them doing like that really matte, not like non-glossy packaging on them and making them look new and cool, especially for M15.
All right. One more M15 topic. Are you guys excited about Hydra-Garrick? Cause I'm not.
No. So,
nope.
I'm excited about emails though. I hear you got a couple of those, Corey.
All right, I do. I didn't think anybody would care about Hydra-Garrick. It just seems silly. But hey, you can get a picture with a 6-foot cardboard cutout.
I heard that, like, doesn't Mythic Spoiler have, like, a contest where, like, you can win a box if you
can win an axe. No, man, you can win an axe, a little Nerf foam axe.
Oh, well, fuck that. I'm not even concerned about the fucking box anymore then. Like, I think Mythic Spoiler's got a fucking contest where you can win a box if you guess Garrick. But I'm way more interested in the Nerf axe.
Well, they already spoiled the Garrick. Like, it's just this giant 20 loyalty thing that is a Hydra and you play against
it. Really?
Oh, really? Yeah, it's like.
I saw a thing today that it was just like the blank, it was Garrick and then like the blank card.
No, like
blank order and shit.
They haven't ruled out
Garrick being a 6 planeswalker. Like,
right.
I don't,
they haven't ruled it out. What they have revealed though, is that Garrick is running around hunting planeswalkers. So if you remember the face of the Hydra, you can like kind of take your limited deck and play against the Hydra for Theros.
Right.
So Garrick is this, it's a 20 loyalty planeswalker that it's not so much a planeswalker as somebody chooses to play as it. And you can only do what Garrick does.
Right.
Which is increase loyalty to make wolves, minus loyalty to give a wolf +1/+0 in death touch, and then -10 to destroy a creature or planeswalker, and then add loyalty counters back onto your Garrick equal to its, like, either power or toughness. And this is their, like, side event. And they're sending a 6-foot-tall cardboard cutout of Garrick to all the stores so that after you beat him or lose him, you can take a picture and send it into their website and have a chance to win a Nerf
cardboard
foam axe. So
I am still the guy that's gonna do that though.
We need to have these FOMAX at Portland, and we're gonna have the Battle Dome.
We're gonna Thunderdome. Have somebody, we need two axes, so like everybody get out there and do this.
Oh my gosh. Okay, you know what? You guys sold me. I thought it only sounded fun for 12-year-olds, but if we can hit each other with foam axes, I'm in.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Yeah, there we go. That'll do it. Can't say no to that.
That's all it takes is like, okay, really? We can stand around and hit each other with foam axes? That does sound like a good idea. Let's do it. And let's encourage everybody else to get us those axes so we can do it.
All right. Let's move on to some emails. We have, we're going to try to get through a couple today. First one comes from Raymond
Perez? Wow.
No, it is not from Ray Perez. I don't want to ruin his last name here. So, Raymundo, as this email actually says, this is you. Hey guys, quick question. One of my friends was kind enough to pick up the 2013 San Diego Comic-Con Black Planeswalker set for me. What are your guys' thoughts about trading or selling the set in order to bind a legacy? So, what I imagine Ray is asking here is, is there going to be more value in holding on to the promo set, which they gave out at Comic-Con last year and is worth quite a bit of money? Or would he be better off trading that into, some dual lands?
I mean, I think.
Did, you guys lose Ryan too?
Yep.
He's really good at like starting Marcel, a sentence recording? And then cutting out.
Marcel?
Yoo-hoo.
Marcel? Jason, why did you ask him that? Are you recording?
Nope, thought I was.
Oh, fuck my life. Did we lose Marcel too? Or does he just not care about emails?
He's just saying, he's all, I gotta shit.
Oh, I'm muted. Fuck. I'm
like, oh my god. Shit.
Marcel, are you recording?
Marcel, are you recording?
Because my call graph crashed and I have no idea how long it's not been recording.
So, but Marcel, you're recording, right?
I thought I was recording. Schiller. We're recording now. That counts, right? Right?
Brian Corbin, sorry. I am sorry for letting them on my cast before this one. Because
Marcel, you're fucking with me, right?
I think I am. I'm not sure yet. Let me check this thing. Let me stop this recording I got going right now, and then let me see if it's still recorded.
My call graph recorded like the 10 calls we did before this one. It kept hanging up and recalling, and it just crashed.
Fuck you, Ryan. Get back on.
Oh, he got canceled. No.
Marcel, why are you saying no?
Because Ryan's not on.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me it wasn't recorded. We can finish shipments without Ryan, but fuck us if we have to start over.
Oh, yeah. No, we're good on that. Okay. I got two recordings going on.
Sweet. Well, we have like 10 minutes left. Let's just go through some emails.
All right, fuck it.
Oh, Ryan's on. You have mastered going like, I think, and then just cutting out.
Yeah, I don't know what the fuck happens.
Like, Skype doesn't want you to have a point, man.
No.
Apparently, it's Skype's like, you had something good to add? Fuck you, call dropped.
Yeah, it really does. And then it doesn't let me back in.
You should file a slander suit against it.
Something like that.
Not even close.
Well, it doesn't let you back in. It gives you a few minutes because Skype knows. Skype's like, all right, if I give you a couple minutes, you forget what you were going to say. Yeah, and everybody else will move beyond it. So, like, it doesn't just drop you and let you back on. It has to let you fucking process through it and then be like, fuck. I forgot what I was going to say.
Oh, no, it does. It's totally ruined. I don't even remember what the fuck I was.
We're talking about Comic-Con. Talking about Comic-Con Planeswalkers.
I think a lot of it comes down to how much you really want to play Legacy and how much of an availability you have in your local area for Legacy. I think if you're going to get the play out of it, then absolutely trade into Legacy cards. The whole point of playing Magic is to play. If those things are just going to sit on your shelf and, you know, gain some value over time, your Legacy staples are probably going to do the same thing. I think the Comic-Con promos will go up more over time, but I think they have less playability. I mean, clearly most people aren't playing with them unless they're just trying to pimp out some standard deck at the moment, I guess. But, yeah, I mean, I'm all for picking up older cards. I don't think either one's a bad investment. I don't think you have to worry about either one, you know, in the long term. But unless you really are just worried about the value, I think you go for the Legacy staples myself.
The Legacy staples, not the Comic-Con?
Yeah, I mean, I think the promos are cool, and I think the promos are going to have more to gain over time. But if you want to play Legacy, like, right. I guess what I'm trying to say is, you know, it goes back to that whole cost. Yeah, it goes back to the whole cost, you know, versus like how much use are you going to get out of them. And I don't think you're going to make enough more off of those San Diego Comic-Con promos as to make them worth just sitting on comparatively to Legacy staples. Yeah, now, if you're going to tell me that you want to turn them into a standard deck, that might be a different story. But since you're picking up Legacy cards that are going to hold value anyway, that's probably your, you know, better bet if you're going to get some play out of it.
And those things are worth an ass ton of money. And like, as playables, you can buy the playable versions of them for a lot cheaper.
Do you guys remember when that stuff came out and like the first week or the first couple of days people were like, oh, these are cool. I think Wizards has a truckload of them. They're just going to hand out and then they won't be worth all that much. And then Wizards was like, oh, just kidding. We made like 100.
Oh, Lord God.
I remember like literally the words, a truckload, like being used in somewhere that everyone just latched onto. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyways. Yeah,
there are none of them.
Anyways, I agree with Ryan. You know, value is great. Plain Magic is better. So, if you have the choice, I suggest Plain Magic.
Absolutely.
Without a doubt. Play Magic first, never trade, because traders, they do a different type of game and they don't play Magic.
Oh, I like to play Magic.
Hey, Marcel, did you forget what fucking cast you're on?
I'm getting into Legacy on Moto. Like, it's so cheap right now, there's no reason not to.
Right on. I'm glad you are. Yeah, yes, like from last week when we talked about, like, prices hit the low, buy in now.
They hit again. They've dropped back down again. I opened a Ruby. And I sold the Ruby off for 70 to actually, I don't know if he was a listener or just somebody else we know
Martin.
Knows.
If you don't know Martin, and banned and unbanned. He was there. Remember from GPM Montreal? Remember?
No. He wasn't the one who bought it. That was his friend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Like he just knew somebody who was looking for one. So yeah, like I, you know, wait for the guy, whatever, got my 70 out of it, bought one to buy for 67. Like, I mean, I could have just easily sold it to a bot, but I figured if somebody actually wanted, might as well give him the $5 off or whatever it is. And I'm just going to use that and buy into duels. I mean, I've opened two bayous, a scrub land. I've opened a bunch of stuff like that. But there's no reason not to just finish that stuff out. If anywhere from $5 to $10 a duel right now, you just can't go wrong. Forces, I mean, I'm going to buy my LEDs because they're down to like 16 or 17.
Yeah, they're actually starting to rebound right now. Like the Taiga, Scrublands, Savannah, Plateau, Badlands are all $5.
I'm going to get off this cast real quick. I love you guys, but
yeah,
I got shit to do.
And then Bayou's $8, and yeah, again, Underground Sea and Volcanic Island. So actually within the week, so since we told them, it dipped down, like you could actually get like Plateaus for like $3. And Scrubland was all the way down to $3.50 also, so.
That's pretty low.
So yeah, the time to buy in was then, and I think prices have stabilized and Vintage Masters is gonna go up. Dak Faden's $4? Wow. That doesn't seem right.
Stuff is cheap.
That's the only thing, the only goddamn Vintage Masters fucking draft I played, that's the only thing I got out of it. It was a fucking Dak Faden. I was like, aww. So, yeah, I'm holding on to one of those. I'm waiting till he's like $12, and then I'm gonna sell that thing off.
Hey, well, you could give that to your grandkids. It'll be $12 by then.
My grandkids are gonna use the internet through their fucking brain, and they're not gonna give a shit about the beta client.
Oh yeah, speaking of such, the beta client. So prices may be dropping some more. Maybe not with Vintage Masters or with Legacy, but the version 3 client is being canceled.
Mm-hmm.
Because the new one is really good and it's gonna replace it.
Exactly. Yeah. So July 16th.
Well, that was the idea.
July 16th is gonna be the date. They're pulling the plug. You will no longer be able to use version 3. You got to use the beta client. And historically, whenever this happens, you have seen prices react, generally not favorably. So if you got any extra stock of cards that you don't really need, or you're not really playing with, I would suggest probably getting rid of it.
Now, Marcel, being a grandpa to the fucking internet, they're like, should I back those up on a hard drive? just in case.
Can't hurt.
Can't hurt. Yeah, you got a point there. You got to send it to the cloud, though. It's got to be.
Should I take pictures from my iPhone of the cards that I have in my fucking collection?
But yeah, so shit's gonna go bad. So If you have, like, things will dip down. The you know, version 3 has been stable. This has not very stable. And what they have not worked on is trading. So there may be a transition period when prices get really low because people are not involved. So it's going to be interesting. I would say long term, though, Moto is going to be successful and it's not going to be the end of the world.
So you would rather buy in than sell out when the transition happens?
Correct. I'm going to wait till stuff goes low and buy in then. I sold a bunch of stuff now that I just wasn't really playing with. And I'm going to wait till it hits and then I'll buy in because Moto long-term is a great option. And they figured out, I think they had to pull the Band-Aid off to get this going. Like, they couldn't have version 3 and beta going at the same time for them to fix everything they needed to do. So I just think over time, and if you guys don't believe into it and you don't have the faith, go sell everything out now because there'll be people like me that'll be willing to buy what you got to sell. So that's the advice.
All right. All right. Next email. The next email is from Corey Baker. Just keeping on the Moto topic here. He says, I have 270 tickets online and I want to use them financially wisely. What do you guys think would be the best way to use them? He wants to be able to play Modern, Legacy, and Standard, but he also wants to make money via finance. So I guess Corey's question is, how should he allot his money? Is he better off to just invest all of these and stuff that will make him short-term games? Is he better off splitting it up to both play and invest, or would you guys suggest he just gets his cards to play with?
Modern, Legacy, and Standard.
He's very ambitious with 370 tickets.
270.
Oh,
buy tattoos.
Choose. All right, so I would say 270 tickets is you could probably do some work with that financially. However, you will not be able to do that and play Magic, and you certainly won't be able to play three formats. You should probably pick a format, put the money into stable cards there, and play a deck, because that sounds like more fun than just sitting your money into something.
Absolutely agree with you, Corbin. Like, that is the way you have to go. You have to find the format that you want to play in. You have to be in it. Like, me, personally, it's Modern, and I, you know, that's where I want to be. That's where I'm happy. It's where I enjoy playing Magic. And so I will sink my money into cards in Modern more than I will into Standard or Legacy, because that's where I want to be. And, you know, you have to pick your battles, of course, but you're not going to be able to buy, like, a solid fucking deck with, you know, 270 tickets. But you can make a huge advance on the deck that you're wanting to play and work your way into it.
I completely agree. That's the way to go. Like, you got to figure out what deck you want to play or what you want to play and just start building your pieces towards there. If you want to put some of your money towards finance and then some of your money building to your deck, that could work. But it's two separate things. You can't do really both at the same time very well. Like, you can buy cards that are strong players. Like, if say you were to buy into a pod, like, all those cards are going to be worth money later on down the line because that deck's always going to be a top contender.
Right.
So if you see it as an investment, like, you could always get your money back out. You could always pawn your deck off, basically, in essence. So if you think about it like that, those are wise investments that you want to go about. And spending your money, maybe acquiring the top tier decks that you think that are going to be around for a while. So
I honestly feel like you don't want to spread it across those, though. Like, yeah, you have to catch, like, what, you know, like we said, what you want to do. Like, you don't want to spread it across that. You don't want to go like, oh, I'm going to invest in some big Modern cards. I'm going to invest in some, like, you know, some dual lands for Legacy and shit like that, because then you're basically not playing Magic. You're spending your money across the board, and you may make some money, you may not, but you're not going to be able to get any value out of it in the process.
Yeah, and playing into Modern, I think, is a smart idea because just the rotation wise, it's less of an issue there, and so your cards are going to be more likely stable, and you don't have to be such on them and on top of the meta.
Well,
and the market,
or he buys into Legacy with the stuff we were just talking about being underpriced. But either way, Standard is definitely not the call.
Correct.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so let's hit this next one up here from Billy. He says, hey, guys, I would like to know where you find collections. What resources do you use to start looking for them? Keep up the good work. So, yeah, I mean, that's straightforward. I know we all, well, some of us, I guess, we do buy collections and, sort them and resell them. So if you're somebody in an area who doesn't already have a line on this, you know, like we do, how do you get started and how do you find those collections? So I guess Jason or Ryan, go back to the days when you first began, you know, buying collections. How do you put yourself into a position where people come to you?
It's like your finance 101 part two. It's fucking perfect.
Craigslist. It's amazing.
Yeah. Craigslist is, it's gotta be, you know, Craigslist is really, really, really hit or miss. I used to do it sometimes once I got to a point where, people would just come to me and I didn't have to, mess with Craigslist. I didn't because sometimes you can get great buys on there and sometimes you look through 1,000 cards and there's not a single rare. And you've just wasted a trip. But that said, it is a good place to start. You can put an ad up on there that you're buying cards. You know, and besides that, just telling people, honestly, a lot of people don't know if you don't say something, and you don't want to, you know, go up against your, you know, if you're LGS and stuff, it's clearly not something you want to, you know, cause hard feelings over. But a lot of players would rather sell to another player than a store. So that's, if you just put that out there and, you know, develop a good relationship with people, that's another way to get started, and that will build over time. But if you're just looking to immediately jump into it, Craigslist is probably your best bet. Maybe local Facebook groups.
How do you not get burnt? Tips for the pros.
Don't pay too, the
don't,
only way
don't overplay. Can, don't overpay.
Yeah, the only way you can, like, lose on a collection is if you overpay. And, like, why would you buy a collection where you're going to lose money? Just don't overpay. Like, yeah. If the person has unrealistic expectations, then that's their business. Like, they're going to have unrealistic expectations.
Yeah, you have to be willing to say no.
But how do you know? Like, do you look through the collection? Do you be like, oh, this is this bulk?
Well, they'll usually tell you the money cards. And if they don't tell you the money cards, that means they have no idea and you can just make a lowball offer. And if they don't take it, then...
Well, you don't know if you're off. I think maybe that puts the wrong connotation on it. It's not a lowball offer because you don't know what they have.
If you have this many rares, I pay, you know, this much on rares and this much on commons and uncommons. And if they take that flat offer, great. And if not, you look through and you can make a more informed offer.
Yeah, but I mean, especially if you're just starting, I wouldn't... You know, you don't want to start trying to
garage sales.
You would say, look at 1,000. You mean look, glance through 500 cards, see what you can find, and try to judge the rest of it based off of that. Don't do that if you're not familiar with it. Like, if people give you the money cards, look at what you can pay for those to still make money on your end, whatever your outs are, and just don't pay more than that. If somebody tells you, oh, here I have 2,000 cards, you know, I don't know that there's anything in it. Well, then there's nothing in it because why are you buying a collection if you're going to lose money? Just don't take the risk. You know, you can still make fair offers to people where you can make money, where everyone walks away happy. You know, that's the way I look at it. If somebody tells me cards are bulk, then they're bulk. That's how it works.
And I've made money on collections where, like, I paid, like, basically, you know, retail buy list on the obvious stuff, and then I just picked the bulk. Because, like, picking bulk is amazing. The stuff you'll pull out of the stuff that they think is worthless, you know, can sometimes be the best part of the collection. So I definitely will, you know, pay what I need to pay to get to look through the other stuff. And that's worked out really well, too. You know, they didn't feel like they were being lowballed, and I got to do some treasure hunting.
Yeah. You know, your first collection will take you longer than all the others. You'll make less money than you think you will, and you'll, especially condition comes into play, and your hourly rate, therefore, will be lower than you hope it will. But, you know, the first one's always the hardest. It gets
easier.
It's
on the job training.
Yeah, for me. Exactly. If you can get out of your first collection without, losing money, then hey, you're doing all right. You'll figure it out. It gets easier. And you'll start to build up those relationships with people, and then they'll send their friends to you if you, you know, handle them respectfully, and they walk away happy, and it just kind of builds upon itself.
Then you'll be stuck hustling cardboard for the rest of your life.
Hustling?
I do get maybe 3 to 4 calls a week of people wanting to meet me at random times, and I can't say no. I just got to make my schedule work to meet somebody up at the store.
Like, if you just took away the magic cards and you put crack cocaine there, like, this would be a whole different narrative.
Yeah.
I mean, once you say no to that first person, man, they're not going to send anyone else to you. You have to make it work.
It's true. Got to make it work. Got to hustle.
I mean, I've spent I spent about 18 hours in the past 2 days sorting cards after I got off work. It's definitely work. That's for sure. But, Pandora's your friend. Mountain Dew's your friend. And, it's fun. Collections are fun when you're done with them.
Hey, Kraken's your friend.
That's right.
Yeah, you need to numb the mind if you have to go through that many cards. Then again, you know, you might numb your mind too far, and then you
miss. I mean, if you're gonna pick 10,000 cards in a couple days, which is something that, you know, I guess Ryan, Jason, and I all have
involved.
We've all done. Yeah, you need your mind sharp because you will be done by the end of it.
You don't want to try to nickel and dime the fucking bulk rares and then all of a sudden hand off something that you missed.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's maybe more or less than you asked for with collections, but I think it is a good starting point for you.
So there you go. Is that the end of the cast? Or are we going to wrap up this Brainstorm Brewery sidetrack after sidetrack with no more Ryan?
I tried to not sidetrack you guys. Like, I tried to not berate Jason, and I tried to not sidetrack you guys.
How do you grade him? What do you guys give him?
Oh, it wasn't bad. We went beef jerky there for a while. We got off on a off on the flavor, but you know what? No, you did great, and I think you had excellent insights. So thank you very much for coming on to the cast.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I was really worried that I was going to fuck up your cast.
Well, if you don't know, that's just a euphemism for you're not really coming back here ever again.
Yeah. No. I get that. Like, I don't ever plan on, like, before I started this, I didn't plan on coming back here ever again, but now I got this in my fucking belt. You guys already did it.
So. John Medina's the only guest that's been back twice, and look what happened to him.
I mean, we do not
and
have
he finally guests. Starts talking when the episode's over. He's just like, you know what? I'm not even going to be – I'm going to pretend I wasn't a part of this episode.
We need more of you around because then Jason shrivels up and goes into his shell. It's like it's amazing.
Jason just didn't want to get yelled at. He just – he came in when he had good information.
Like I'm Jason Alt Kryptonite.
You might be. I'm going to study this theory. I'm going to find out some more.
Oh, right. I love you. Don't stab me with the bottle.
Well, there we go. Brainstorm Brewery. Heavy metal, heavy meta. Thank you for the play mats, everyone. SVU. And we out this bitch. Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com. CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.